Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Pure Multifamily REIT First Quarter Results Conference Call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Thursday, May 11th, 2017. I would now like to turn the conference over to Pure Multifamily's Director of Investor Relations, Andrew Gregg. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. Good morning, everyone. I'm Andrew Gregg, Director of Investor Relations for Pure Multi, and I'd like to welcome you today to our discussion of our 2017 Q1 financial results. We will keep our opening remarks on this call brief, trusting that you've had a chance to review our consolidated financial statements and the related MD&A dated May 10, 2017, for the 3 months ended March 31, 2017. If not, the documents are available on our website at www.puremultifamily.com under the Investor Info section or on SEDAR. With me on the call today are CEO Steve Evans, CFO Scott Shillington, and Vice President Samantha Adams. Following our formal remarks, we will conduct a Q&A session, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up your questions. Before we get underway, I would like to make a safe harbor statement. The following discussion will include forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to be materially different from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect current expectations of management regarding future events and operating performance, and Pure Multi assumes no obligation to update or revise them to reflect new events or circumstances except as required by law. For a further description of the forward-looking statements, including the risk factors related to our company and business that could cause actual results to differ materially from the results discussed in the forward-looking statements, please refer to our MD&A dated May 10, 2017, which is available on SEDAR or on our website at www.puremultifamily.com. I would now like to pass the discussion over to our CEO, Steve Evans.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks everyone for joining us today. As you may remember, as we closed out 2016, we talked a lot about our capital recycling initiatives. We have dramatically improved the quality of our portfolio through strategic capital recycling, disposing of older non-core assets and acquiring newer properties with a more attractive growth prospect and lower future CapEx requirements. In Q4, we disposed of two older apartment communities in Dallas, and we reinvested these proceeds into two new property acquisitions in early 2017 with an average age of 7 years for $80 million U.S. On January 25th, we closed on the 276-unit Class A luxury apartment community known as Pure Creekside at Onion Creek, our first acquisition in the Austin, Texas submarket for $40 million. And on January 27th, we closed on the 288-unit Class A apartment community known as Landsbrook at Twin Creeks, located in the Allen submarket of Dallas, also for $40 million. In keeping with our plan to prudently manage our balance sheet to reduce our overall debt, these acquisitions were financed with mortgages that blended to a 46% loan-to-value. As of March 31st, our average year of construction across our portfolio is 2006, an improvement from 2004, 1 year previous. On the equity front, in February, we filed a final short-form base shelf prospectus to provide Pure Multifamily with financial flexibility and efficiency to access the Canadian capital market. The prospectus is valid for a 25-month period, during which time we may issue securities having an aggregate offering price of up to $500 million U.S. And at the end of March, we launched a Canadian $70 million equity offering. The bought deal was increased thereafter to $80 million in April, and including the over-allotment, we closed on Canadian $92 million of equity on April 7th, or approximately $68 million U.S. dollars. The offering was oversubscribed with strong demand from institutional and retail investors. Operationally, it has been a very busy quarter. As recently announced, we have started the property management internalization process. Since our IPO, property management of our portfolio has been overseen by a third-party manager, the Tipton Asset Group. we would like to extend our sincere thanks to Brian Kearns and his entire team for their commitment, expertise, and enthusiasm over the past 5 years. We are happy to announce that the senior executive team from within Tipton, who have been responsible for our portfolio, have joined us. Leanne Chapman and Janet Jackson, senior executive team members from Tipton, whom Samantha and I have worked with since 2008, will now run our U.S. management team from within Pure Multifamily and will be located at our new Dallas office. It is our belief that this continuity of management team will result in minimal disruption across our portfolio. We are happy to report that Pure Multifamily has delivered another solid quarter of financial results. Pure Multifamily's portfolio generated 3.4% same property top-line rental revenue growth Q1 over Q1. It is worth noting that the average rent per occupied unit for the period was up 4.6%, which indicates continued strength in terms of the rental rate growth within our submarkets. However, we experienced a drop in occupancy during the quarter, which eroded some of that rent growth, bringing it down to the 3.4% on a same property basis that I just mentioned. As a result, there was also some additional occupancy-related cost increases for turnover and marketing, which in turn impacted NOI growth. And thus, our same property NOI grew by 1.7% Q1 over Q1. These occupancy-related issues stem from a surge in supply in our markets, most significantly in Dallas, which forecasters indicate will be fully absorbed in the coming quarters. I would now like to pass the discussion on to Scott Shillington, our CFO.
Thanks, Steve. Before going through the financial highlights for the quarter, I'd like to note that all amounts stated on this call reflect Pure Multi's interest as disclosed in the MD&A. We feel Pure Multi's interest provides the most useful information to the unit holders when looking at our financial results. Within the MD&A, we have provided a reconciliation that reflects these adjustments. At March 31, 2017, Pure Multifamily's portfolio consisted of 17 investment properties, with an average year of construction being 2006, 5,793 residential units with an average unit size of 911 square feet, and was situated on 309 acres of land. The investment properties were fair valued at $871.1 million and had a weighted average IFRS capitalization rate of 5.33%. Pure Multifamily's net rental income continued to increase as the 3 months ended March 31, 2017, totaled $11.1 million compared to $9.7 million in the comparative period, representing an increase of 13.9%. The primary reasons for this increase in net rental income was due to operating additional properties during the current period, the high grading of our portfolio, and strong same property revenue growth. General and administrative expenses for the 3 months ended March 31, 2017 was 3.8% against total revenues compared to 1.6% in the prior year. The reason for this increase was primarily driven by the internalization of the asset management function, which occurred during the third quarter of 2016. The additional costs incurred during the current quarter, specifically relating to the internalized asset management function, was approximately $438,000. Additionally, we incurred approximately $82,000 in non-recurring expenses relating to the recently announced internalization of the property management function. By removing these expenses, we can create an apples-to-apples comparison with the prior period, which would result in a G&A expense against revenues of 1.3% in the current year. At March 31, 2017, Pure Multifamily had a debt-to-gross book value ratio of 56.3%, and the mortgages had an average interest rate of 3.73% with an average term remaining until maturity of 9.1 years. This compared to 55.2%, 3.74%, and 9.4 years remaining at year-end 2016. Looking at our funds from operations, we have slightly changed our calculation by removing the amortization of transaction costs from the reconciliation of the FFO, as this allows us to be more aligned with the new standards issued by REALPAC. The impact of this change on the current period's total FFO was approximately $143,000, or 0.26 of a penny. Per basic unit basis, and $119,000 or 0.24 cents per basic unit during the prior year period. The resulting FFO payout ratio for the current period was 101.4% or 9.2 cents per basic unit, compared to 98.8% or 9.5 cents per basic unit under our previous calculation method for this year, 2017. And in the prior period, the payout ratio was 92.5% or 10.1 cents per basic unit, compared to 90.4% or 10.4 cents per basic unit, as was previously stated under the previous calculation method. Now, moving on to the adjusted funds from operations, the most significant change identified by the REALPAC white paper relates to capital expenditures. We feel no change is required to our calculation relating to this guidance, as historically we have only capitalized value-enhancing expenditures with our reserve estimate of $300 per residential unit reflecting the maintenance CapEx portion. We feel we have been one of the most conservative companies in the multifamily REIT space with this calculation, as over the last three fiscal years, our deferred maintenance provision represented a percentage of total capital expenditures of 55% in 2014, 44% in 2015, and 39% in 2016, all of which were significantly well above the Canadian multifamily REIT averages during those periods. For Q1 2017, our deferred maintenance provision represented 47% of total capital expenditures compared to 55.7% during the same quarter of 2016. Our resulting AFFO per basic unit was 8.7 cents or 108.2% for the first quarter of this year compared to 9.6 cents or 97.7% respectively in the prior year comparative period. Our management's estimated NAV at the end of the first quarter of 2017 remains at $6.90 US or $9.45 if using a 73-cent exchange rate for Canadian dollars. I'll now turn things over to Samantha, who will comment on the operations for the quarter.
Thanks, Scott. From an operations perspective, we continue to focus on rental rate growth, occupancy, and monitoring our controllable expenses. As discussed on a previous call, our recent acquisitions of stabilizing Class A properties can have a short-term impact on occupancy and NOI growth, but we believe that our strategy of high-grading our portfolio will ultimately translate into strong growth for our unit holders. This quarter, we also rolled out the integration of the acquisitions of Landsbrook and Pure Creekside. Both properties have performed well in the 2 months of our ownership. Pure Creekside is in stabilization mode, and while occupancy is in the low to mid-90s, we anticipate the process to full stabilization could take approximately 12 months. As we discussed on our prior call, the operational changes that we have implemented in San Antonio have started to have a positive impact, and our same-store revenue growth for Q1 was 5.5% over Q1 2016. We are now through the weaker winter leasing months, and we anticipate continued growth across our areas of operations at both Brackenridge and Parkett West. In Dallas, the economy continues to be robust, and our Dallas portfolio is performing well. This is further supported by our same-store revenue growth for Dallas, which was 3.7% Q1 over Q1. The NOI for the Dallas properties did decrease somewhat, as a few of our properties in Dallas experienced lower than anticipated occupancy due to timing. Storms resulted in lower traffic, and some new units coming online in the area as well had an impact. This resulted in slightly lower revenue growth and increased expenses in marketing, turnover, and payroll. In addition, repairs and maintenance were slightly higher this quarter due to some relatively minor storm damage across many of our properties. We do not anticipate this to continue over the coming quarters, and it is worth noting that occupancy across the entire Dallas market decreased this quarter to 94.9%, down from 95.5% this time last year, but is also expected to improve over the coming quarters as new supply is absorbed. In Houston, our Deer Park asset has performed very well and continues to maintain strong occupancy and rental rate growth. Walker Commons experienced slightly higher vacancy and associated cost increases, and as a result, our overall Houston same-store revenue declined 0.6% Q1 over Q1. However, it's important to highlight the Houston market overall experienced an annualized decline of 3.3%, and we anticipate being able to deliver moderate growth across the Houston portfolio over the coming quarters, but we will continue to monitor the markets closely. Our Phoenix asset located in the Chandler submarket has also performed very well. The Phoenix economy continues to strengthen, and our property delivered same-store revenue growth of 3.3% Q1 over Q1. On a portfolio-wide basis, as of March 31, 2017, our properties had a 95.2% leased occupancy rate, and we increased our weighted average rental rate to $1,240 per occupied unit, or $1.36 per square foot for the first quarter of 2017, compared to $1,170 average rental rate per occupied unit, or $1.27 per square foot for the same quarter of 2016. The organic rental rate growth we experienced during the quarter represents an increase of 4.6% same property average rent per occupied unit when compared to the first quarter of 2016. Our NOI margins came in at 53.3% for Q1, and this is compared to 57.1% in the prior year. The difference is primarily due, as previously mentioned, to the slightly higher vacancy at the Dallas properties, increased turnover costs as a result of storm damage, as well as higher property taxes in San Antonio. I will now turn things back over to Steve to wrap up.
Thanks, Samantha. So in summary, we continue to execute our strategy to build a high-quality Class A apartment portfolio spread across the strongest growth markets of the U.S. Sun Belt. Our properties are well-positioned in leading submarkets and are in close proximity to demand drivers such as nightlife, restaurants, shopping, and large corporate campuses. In 2016, having executed our capital recycling program, we focused on improving the quality of our portfolio, and thus 5 out of our last 7 acquisitions were brand new assets in stabilization mode. Going forward, our plan is to remain focused on enhancing our average portfolio age by acquiring a mix of brand new and near new assets in great locations. The pipeline of available high quality properties in our target markets remains very robust. And as such, and pending the completion of property due diligence, we have fully allocated the capital from our recent bought deal equity financing. And we expect to be able to make announcements relating to our acquisitions in the coming weeks. Following our successful internalization of our asset management function in September of last year, we are excited to begin the property management internalization, which will permit us to build our brand and presence in our target high growth markets while enhancing operational efficiencies of our platform. We anticipate that our entire portfolio will be fully internalized by year-end or early 2018. So in summary, given our top-quality apartment portfolio concentrated within the strongest growth markets of the U.S. Sun Belt, and the additional efficiencies that our internalized property management platform will provide, we are very excited about the growth potential in the coming quarters for Pure Multifamily unit holders. So on behalf of the management team at Pure Multifamily REIT, I'd like to thank our employees and directors for their hard work and loyalty, and of course our unit holders for their continued support. And with that, I'd like to open up the lines for any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, should you have a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Stefan Bois from A Capital. Stefan, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm just wondering, you mentioned, of course, the higher maintenance cost and higher operating expenses in Q1, and I was just wondering if you expect some spillover in Q2 as well.
A little bit in April, but from what I've been told, as we move through May, everything is normalizing.
Okay, from May. I just want to get back to the redeployment of capital recently raised. I just want to confirm that you are about to deploy all the capital raised in the next few weeks, I guess?
Yeah. What I said, and for greater clarity, we'll be in a position to make announcements on acquisitions that will fully deploy it. That does not mean it'll close in the next few weeks. For clarity, it'll still take a little longer than that before we get it all closed. But yeah, fully allocated.
Okay. Thank you. And
subject to final due diligence, of course, on the assets.
Of course. I don't want to push it too far, but I was just wondering, can you give some color on the expected cap rate from that?
The market cap rates for high-quality Class A assets in our markets tend to be right in the 5 to 5 and quarter cap rate range. So it's good within that kind of wheelhouse, if you will.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you. And a bit more general questions. How do you qualify the new construction in your markets? Is it accelerating at the moment?
Well, that's a good question, and it kind of ties into the comments that we made during our discussion already. Dallas, as an example, which is maybe the best example for us to point to, given that our largest exposure of holdings, experienced an increase from 2016 going into 2017. And by way of example, this data comes from Axiometrics, which is one of the large tracking groups that track deliveries and occupancy and so forth throughout the U.S. markets. Dallas, according to them, received in 2016 a new supply of 17,420 units. In 2017, the deliveries are projected to increase by about 37%, up to roughly 23,821 units. That's quite a spike upwards. Everybody saw this coming. The consensus is that it will have a little bit of impact, but will be fully absorbed. And that's exactly what we experienced in the last quarter, is that it did have a little bit of an impact in terms of impacting our physical occupancy at our holdings. The good news on that front is the 2018 deliveries are scheduled to drop by approximately 68%, down to about 7,529 units for Dallas. So that is an indication, and following years are in a similar sort of a lower range, so an under-delivery, if you will, which really indicates to us that we'll see some solid return of occupancy and pressure on rental growth, which obviously as a landlord is good news.
Okay, so I guess despite the increase in supply, the absorption remains very strong, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be clear, Dallas as a whole needs you know roughly 20,000 per unit if you just sort of flatlined it over the longer term, or straight lined it, if you will. So that just keeps it in equilibrium. So we had a little bit of a pop during 2017 in terms of additional deliveries. But the tightening of supply on a go-forward basis for the following years is going to serve us very well.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jenny Ma from Canaccord Genuity. Jenny, please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Jenny.
Good morning, Jenny.
Continuing on the topic of the deliveries in Dallas, do you have a sense, or does your team on the ground have a sense of how much of it has come through this year? I would expect there would be some sort of seasonality impact, or is it some that may have spilled over from 2016? I'm just trying to gauge how much has come online and whether or not the big bubble of it for the year has actually rolled through yet.
Right. So, you know what, in terms of the 17,000 I mentioned in Dallas for 2016 would have all hit the market throughout 2016. In terms of 2017, there's not a lot of seasonality of when they finish. It just really depends on construction crew. I don't know. I wouldn't suggest it's necessarily an arithmetic average per month either. So I don't think we track it down to that specific level. But I'll see if I can research a bit more and take that offline for you. But
okay.
Suffice it to say, we'll probably see a little bit of impact into Q2 and then start to see the corner turn and stabilize, and certainly into the latter part of the year and into next year, we'll see very strong pressure on occupancy, according to most forecasters.
Okay. With regards to acquisitions, would it be fair to assume the modeling of the contribution starting in Q3, so sort of a late June close for what you've got under contract?
Yeah, mid to late June is probably a fair assessment of that.
Okay. And then when you say fully deploying the capital, does that assume a similar leverage level to what you were carrying throughout 2016, sort of in the mid-55% range? Or is there a little bit of delevering that you're taking advantage of?
That's sort of been our stated objective, is to delever a little bit, so that is our intent.
Okay. And then looking at the cap rates for the properties that you guys own, it looks like there was some movement in Dallas and in San Antonio, there was a little bit of downward and then also an upward move. So maybe a little color on what's moved the cap rates on the existing properties. I know that some of the acquisitions that closed this year have also taken your average down, but what about the ones that you've already owned?
Can I touch on that?
For the Dallas ones, Jenny, it's the specifically the Irving area, which is where we had our Hackberry Creek, Vistas at Hackberry Creek. Most specifically, it's the Class B properties in that area that are seeing the most significant cap rate compression. So our Hackberry Creek dropped 50 basis points from a 6 cap to a 5.5 cap, as well as the NOI increase it's been having there. So that had a dramatic increase in value. Valley Ranch is in that same area, and it had a 25 basis point drop as it is an A-class property and a newer property than Hackberry Creek. So specifically in Dallas, it is tied to that area. So the other one, San Antonio, Pierce States dropped 25 basis points. Again, it's not a significant change in the San Antonio area right now. It's just a drop based on comparables in that market for that property location specifically. And for Houston, which one? I just don't have it right in front of me exactly. Which one in Houston you're talking to specifically?
No, nothing in Houston, just Dallas and San Antonio.
Oh, just Dallas and San Antonio, yeah.
Yeah, Houston looks like it was unchanged. Were these based on just your research or were these externally appraised?
No, these are all externally appraised, these ones that we discussed.
Okay, gotcha.
I would add, Jenny, that the cap rates overall in Dallas and San Antonio from a 30,000-foot view don't appear to have changed significantly. They're pretty steady.
Okay. Maybe this question is for Scott. With the G&A increase as a result of the internalization, you had mentioned the 82 associated with 82,000 associated with the internalization of property management. So, two-part question: if we back out the 82, does the Q1 represent a good run rate for G&A? And then my second part of the question is: are there other one-time costs you're expecting to roll through for the internalization of property management?
Yeah. So if you back out the 82 from a corporate G&A standpoint, the percentage of revenues, yes, that would be a fair estimate. We have more one-time costs or non-recurring costs relating to our property management as we announced we're going through that right now. So there will be costs associated with that, as well as we will begin to have some additional G&A costs from our property management team down there, which once we have all the properties transitioned over, or even some of the properties as we transition them over from the Tipton Group, we will start to realize the savings at that point in time. So there will be some timing differences, non-recurring type costs throughout the rest of this year, but it won't be a full. Once it's fully stabilized and fully moved over, that's where we'll realize all the savings on an ongoing basis.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. I'll turn it back. Thanks.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Amar Shah from National Bank Financial. Amar, please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I know you've touched on PureView and Pure Estates and that the lease-up's going to take some time. Just wanted to get an update on that in terms of what the timing might be for normalized occupancy.
Pure Estates, we're still expecting normalized occupancy by the end of this quarter. It's currently sitting at about 93% leased. And PureView, I believe on the call, we thought it was going to take the balance of the year to sort of stabilize, and that is still the plan.
Okay, great. I see that, same property NOI, it's a bit lower this quarter. It's probably more transitory. Would you be able to provide a bit of a run rate for the rest of the year for what you think that might be?
We don't really do the full guidance. What we've stated historically, it's not going to be as high as it has been in prior years due to the occupancy issues. We mentioned, as Steve just mentioned, in Dallas specifically for the rest of this year until the supply gets absorbed and there's less new additions coming online. We expect to be higher than what it is over the full year on a full year-to-day basis currently, but we don't expect to be as high as prior years. I mean, that's kind of the guidance that we give without giving anything specific in there.
No, fair enough. Okay. Thanks a lot. I'll turn it back.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Brad Sturges from Industrial Alliance Securities. Brad, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just quickly, I guess as a follow-up to that, but more on the occupancy side, you're still within your target range. I guess you're just more at the lower end of the ranges. Are you pretty comfortable in the average being somewhere in that 95% range, at least in the next couple of quarters before it starts to trend higher?
We've actually seen in specifically some of the Dallas properties that saw the dip in occupancy, I've already seen those numbers climb back up to sort of 96, 7, 8-ish, and each property's a little bit different. So, I mean, we'll obviously provide, you know, comments at the end of Q2, but it looks as though, as of today, things are getting back to where they were in the prior year in terms of occupancy.
Okay. And even with, if you are seeing that increase in occupancy, even with a little bit more elevated costs trickling into Q2, you should see an improvement back into more normalized margins that you're realizing last year. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Q2's margins look like, but I would say as we move through Q3, yes.
Okay. From the acquisition point of view that you talked about, can you give a little color in terms of the assets you're looking at right now? Is that from one specific vendor? Would it be a portfolio of a few assets, or is this individual assets from multiple vendors?
Yeah, they're individual assets, and within our target market, so it's kind of right in our wheelhouse, with a good average age across the assets. So, as I said, we'll start having some formal announcements in the immediate term.
And also in line from a mix you've talked about before between stabilized and newer construction, let's say?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Dean Wilkinson from CIBC World Markets. Dean, please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, everybody.
Hey, Dean.
Steve, perhaps just a question on Tipton, and I don't want to get too deep into the nitty-gritty on it, but sort of taking on the people, and certainly I think Leanne's probably the only person who knows the properties better than Sam, versus, say, acquiring Tipton outright, what was sort of the pros and cons of going each way, and you know, does Tipton continue to exist, and given sort of the key people have kind of been gone, with the exception of, say, Brian?
Sure. Yeah, Tipton's more than the team that we took. We just took our team from within Tipton. So, yeah, they'll carry on and exist and do very well, I'm confident. The pros and cons really were it came down for us to really sticking to our knitting and focusing on doing everything that we can to focus on efficiencies and operations specific to our portfolio, and not at this stage in our cycle to be distracted at all by third-party fee management business. And so, yes, Tipton will continue to exist for sure. In fact, we intend and expect to work with Tipton in other capacities, as I've historically done a lot of work with Brian on the acquisition and due diligence side.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, that's the other side of their business. So we expect to continue to do some work there on a market fee basis in the future, and so it's just a different business line, if you will, for within Tipton as we shift over our management of our portfolio internalized. It made sense to move some of the executive team over, so it was done on a very cards up basis. Working with Brian, he and I have worked together for many years before we started working together for this platform. So it was a friendly transition and done in a manner that was very professional. And like I say, when they're moving, we were a significant piece of their portfolio. So when we're moving that over to an internal structure and the revenue that goes with it moves, it made sense to move their executive team over and rationalize their expenses too. So it was kind of a good fit for both parties. Obviously, be a better fit for Tipton if we never moved, but that was always in the cards to happen. When we got to a critical mass stage that made sense to do it, it was always intended to happen.
Okay, so and realizing that is a very sort of long-term ingrained relationship, Brian would still be a potential source of product to come to you, or are there sort of non-competes that he may have vis-a-vis some of his other contracts around that?
Yeah, no, there's no non-competes, and it's not really that Brian sources product so much as works through it with me, because typically the asset opportunities come directly to our team, and we then engage and work with Brian with his expertise in terms of being feet on the ground to do the initial review and tour, and then go one layer deeper as we refine the search. We get more specifically hands-on involved. And then Brian has the team to conduct the due diligence work, and that's the kind of thing that he's done for us in the past, and frankly done it for free because he was going to get a management contract.
Right.
On a go-forward basis, we'll probably engage him in some of that work on a market fee basis because he won't, of course, be getting the management contract. So, no, I don't think there's any issue. He has other clients and always has, but it's really our team that finds the assets and then works, you know, brings Tipton or brings Brian in, and he rolls up his sleeves and does the underwriting initially and effectively conducts the due diligence when we get to that stage.
Perfect. That's clear. Okay. Just a question for Sam. On the occupancy levels there, so as we sit here today, has that 240 basis point gap between sort of physical and leased caught up?
As we sit today, no. You know what? The gap is about the same, but
okay.
The numbers have improved.
I would assume that that's just been a lateral shift upwards then?
Yes.
Yes, that's enough. That's it for me then. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, Dean.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press star followed by one. Your next question comes from Jimmy Shan from GMP Securities. Jimmy, please go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to understand those delivery numbers in Dallas that you spoke about, the 23 or 24,000 some odd units that are coming. Do you have a sense of how much of those units are coming direct that are going to be coming directly in your submarkets?
Yeah, so that's spread across all of Dallas. So there's going to be a mix between the downtown core, which historically has had the lion's share of received the lion's share of new deliveries. In more recent years, it's kind of been split roughly 50-50 between the more close-in core-type locations and then spread amongst the key growth submarkets. So most of our assets being held within those northern submarkets where a lot of the large job drivers are, it's something like 50%, and then beyond that, we do have a sense on an individual asset basis what's coming up and out of the ground in each submarket. It's pretty granular to get into, but in terms of a percentage, it's roughly something less than, you know, 40-50% in our area of the totals that that I spoke of earlier.
Okay, so if the mix before, and I know in prior calls you talked about you know, the same thing, that a lot of the, you know, maybe a year ago out of that 17,000 units, maybe the majority of them would be coming from more the downtown location. But I guess if you strip out the downtown locations and you look at just kind of your submarkets, then it sounds like the supply, the delivery is much more pronounced in your submarkets than it had been in the past. Would that be fair?
I think that's fair, although I would say really for the last couple of years that's been consistent. It switched to being more split between the northern, you know, stronger growth submarkets and the core type submarket. Probably 2 to 3 years ago it started to do that shift, and prior to that it was skewed more towards the downtown markets, and that was really a function of rent available, like rental rate, that would justify new construction. Took a little while for the suburban markets to get to a point where the rental rates can justify the new construction, but it's in that range now, so we're seeing that spread across the markets a bit more evenly.
So I guess I know you mentioned, I think the occupancy is sort of, so far what you could tell, it's bounced back a little bit, but But I guess it wouldn't be, given those deliveries, it wouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised if we see a bit of an occupancy dip as we move through the balance of the year, right? Like just in the next few quarters.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's conservatively we would expect to have some continued impact from the deliveries, but it's difficult to say. I mean, all of our teams are pretty proactive, and we're doing everything we can to make sure we stay as full as possible. But I think that's, if you're looking forward on a conservative basis, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of impact.
Okay. And then the deliveries, the 7,500 for next year, I mean, that is a dramatic drop. And the reason for that is it simply construction lack of availability or lower advance rate in the construction financing market? Like what's driving the sudden drop?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. The biggest thing is the, construction financing has started to dry up a little bit, and that's combined with an increase in construction costs. When you are embarking on a three-year process to build out a property, which is roughly the timeline that it takes, and if you can build that asset to call it somewhere between a 5.5 and 5.75 cap rate by way of example, and you can then exit the asset at a 5 cap, you make a bit of a profit. The lenders are comfortable with that on the construction lending front. As we start to see the chip up in interest rates and a trend established that interest rates over time are going to probably continue to gain a little momentum and move up over time, some of the investors dial back their interest level a little bit because, you know, if your construction costs continue to climb, maybe instead of building to a 5.75 cap, you might be at a 5.6 cap or maybe even a 5.5 cap. And if interest rates over that three-year period continue to clock up a little bit, suddenly you might be selling at a 5.5 cap and or less, and maybe or greater rather, and therefore not making much of a profit or even potentially a loss. So the interest level from an investor's perspective is less intent, I guess I could use that word, and on the construction lenders front, they just see the same data points and how bankers tend to react. They're extremely cautious and they kind of ratchet back their interest level a notch too. So I think all those things are contributing.
Yeah, okay. That's good color. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ewa Kiwa from Laurentian Bank Securities. Ewa, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Just on internalization, I think most of the questions were already answered, but just to confirm, in 2018, once everything is transferred and fully internalized, what kind of savings do you see? I think you were paying around 3% to Trepton, and you kind of mentioned around 50 beeps. Is it still the same number?
Yeah, I mean, that's our current estimate, obviously. Once we have everything rolled over, and we expect it to have by the end of the year, based on our current kind of numbers and projections as we build our team out down there, we expect 50 basis points would be a good estimate. We do expect the savings under the 3% for sure, though, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the next question is more related to the acquisitions. Just on the debt level, I know that you were around 3.73%. Weighted average interest rate at the end of the quarter. What kind of rates do you see now on the new mortgages?
Yeah, currently, obviously, we haven't locked into anything because we're still going through due diligence, but we're seeing sub 4% still on long-term rates.
Sub 4. And there's no problem with getting financing because you did mention that like for construction loans it's dried up a little. Do you see anything like that in the residential market?
No, not in permanent financing. There's a ample interest. If anything, the life codes are quite motivated because they have probably from the debt update we got just yesterday from our mortgage team in Dallas is that LifeCos generally have placed less capital year to date than what they intended to, so they're pretty aggressive, which is good news for us. So no shortage of financing, especially at the lower leverage range that we're looking at. There is a very strong interest from a wide pack of players.
That's great. That's good news. And the last question is more to disposition. We didn't kind of mention anything on that. And considering the fact that you see compression on cap rates in Class B in Dallas, are there any of the assets you still own you might consider to dispose and use the proceeds to deploy in Class A?
Yeah, so in the immediate future, we don't have plans to exit any more assets in the coming quarters, because we probably have two remaining assets within our portfolio that I would characterize as Class B. They happen to be in great locations that are, frankly, riding the coattails of the Class A assets that kind of surround them. And so the operational efficiencies and the rent growth that we're seeing at those assets is quite dynamic. So we're not in any hurry to exit those. We're okay with a smaller exposure to Class B vis-a-vis our entire portfolio, which right now we have something in the 10 to 15% or less range of our holdings would be considered Class B assets, and I'm comfortable with that. And as I said before, it's one sector that you might see movement in cap rates earlier to back to their more historic norms, but operationally those assets perform so well for us, we're certainly in no hurry to exit those.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you, operator. So on behalf of Samantha, Scott, Andrew, myself, and the entire Pure Multi Management team, we'd like to thank you for spending time with us today. And as we always say, if you have any questions about the call or anything about our portfolio or business, please do not hesitate to call us. You don't have to wait for these calls. We're happy to chat at any time. So thanks again for your time.